the EFL. It's the Football League podcast that, like Britain, has a problem with excessive wind. This week, foxes and tractors reach accord at the King Power. Will it be back to the fruit and veg stall for Beale if Sunderland lose this weekend? Shrewsbury ditch their tailor in search of style and substance. Charlton are not happy, and we got plenty more besides. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And here we are again then with another show in our new Wednesday time slot. Hope you're enjoying the little rejig that we've had for 2024. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I'm joined by my two regulars. How are you doing, Adrian Clark?
Howdy. Yeah, all good. All good. Enjoyed your intro. Well played.
Thanks. Considering how little sleep I've had, that's about as good as I could have done it, I think. Sam Parkin's back with us too. Sam, you and I saw Michael Carrick's team last night. He probably had some nightmares as well, didn't he?
I was thinking of about 10 minutes to go. 10 minutes to go or 10 minutes gone? 10 minutes gone that I should probably do a little bit on Middlesbrough tomorrow. You know, just do a little segment on their game plan and how difficult they made it for Chelsea. Now, let's save it for a resounding championship victory next time up at the Riverside, because it didn't go well last night, did it?
No, well, at least maybe Morgan Rogers added a few extra noughts to the next offer that's coming in from Aston Villa. We'll keep an eye on that. All right, before we get going, how about this? Our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, opening gambit time. This week, we're talking brutal sackings. This after Michael Appleton got his walking papers minutes after Charlton's defeat on Tuesday night. Adrian, what springs to mind in this category for you?
Yeah, 15 minutes, apparently. Obviously, it was only about half an hour when the news broke, wasn't it? So, yeah, it was very, very swift. Yeah, there's one that springs to mind from my own career. It's Alvin Martin, just the nicest guy, like a real gentleman is Alvin. And he got the bullet at Southend United on a night, a miserable night. It was one of those midweekers. It was Hull City at home. The ground was half empty, and yeah, it was a pretty poor performance, and conceded a late goal, it was vicious, really vicious. But I remember this clearly because I was injured at the time, and I was in one of the sort of boxes, if you can call it that, at Roots Hall. I was inside with a few of the other lads not involved, and John Main, who was the chairman at the time, came in during the second half, I think when it was 0-0, and said, boys, you know, just wanted to sort of, we're thinking about making a change with the gaffer. I just wanted to sort of get your take on it. And I was furious about it. I was like, what are you asking us for? Like, those out of the team are going to say, yeah, get rid. Those who he signed, you know, are going to say, no, keep it. It's your decision. It's not that you don't sound the players out. I really hated it. And then there was a mixed opinion and it all got a little bit heated. And anyway, he went off. We conceded a late goal and then news broke straight away that he'd sacked him on the final whistle, and he'd gone to release the news to the baying mob that had gathered outside the players exit, to which they were, you know, whooping and cheering and everything. So it's just a horrible game sometimes, football, isn't it? Because Alvin is a good bloke and he's, you know, he knows his football. It just didn't work out. And yeah, it was a horrible way to go because everyone, you know, those fans that were still in and around the ground were buzzing that he'd just been given the sack. But really, I don't think that's particularly tasteful, but that's how football is sometimes.
Yeah, that is brutal. At least in that case, and with Michael Appleton, there were home games. I always think there must be nothing worse for a manager than you get the sack and then it's like, oh, 7-hour coach trip home with these players. You've just lost me my job. This is going to be fun.
You'd get the train, wouldn't you?
Travel lodge. I'll come back in the morning on my own coin. Don't worry about it. Sam, you got one for me?
Can't remember anything as theatrical as that. But I remember Kevin Wilson was my manager at Northampton, ex-Chelsea Kevin Wilson. And he, if memory serves me right, definitely lost his job in the wake of a home defeat midweek in the rain, similar to Clarkey's experience. I think we lost at home to Blackpool. We'd lost 8 out of 10 games. So it wasn't really out of the blue. But I think when you hear the murmurings in the lead up to a game and then in the dressing room afterwards, I don't recall ever saying goodbye to him either. Mm. So that's just how cutthroat it can be. And they actually went back to a previous lover, previous manager, Northampton, Kevin Broadhurst, who'd had relative success previously, he actually replaced Wilson and took charge for the rest of the season, in which we did actually manage to stay up. So proved to be quite a good decision. And I remember signing for, this is this season prior actually, I went to Millwall and I got a management duo, the sack, before I'd even kicked a ball. Alan McCleary and Rhino, Heath Stevens.
Poor recruitment.
Poor recruitment, mate. Signed me. I remember, it's like a bit hazy, but I remember there being a midweek cup game. I think they played Ipswich and they lost, and then there must have been a league game and I wasn't particularly good in training. It was my first kind of loan experience. So I remember being a bit on edge and, yeah, different kind of experience, training with the first team every day. And they got sacked. And then the following week, Ray Harford and Steve Gritt put me in the side. We beat Oxford 5-0. I scored 2. Neil Harris scored 3. And the rest, they say, is history.
So it was brutal, but it ended up working out okay.
Just a quick one on Kevin Wilson. I remember him as a fringe player at Ipswich when I was a junior blue back in the early 80s. Did he have a tash when he was a manager, or had it gone?
He didn't. He was completely clean shaved.
Was he?
Yeah. Which was odd for me because growing up, he was like the poster boy for the tash, wasn't he
really
in the 80s.
And his assistant, a strong tash, yeah.
His assistant, interestingly, who was, in my recollection, just a brilliant guy, perfect number 2, Russell Slade.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He went on to be a manager, didn't he?
Yeah, he went on to be quite a successful manager, I think, Sheffield United for a bit.
I'm surprised you didn't say Gary Penrice as the poster boy for the 80s moustache.
Hey, I had to suffer and watch him play, mate. Don't mention that name anywhere near me. Old Penrice, blimey.
Come back, listener, if you're under the age of 30. We'll get back to modern-day football soon. Just to wrap this up, I've got a little twist on the theme. When I was a young apprentice at BBC Radio Nottingham, Carlton Palmer was the Mansfield manager, and he actually just resigned on air. In his post-match interview, he said, I've had a good career. I don't need to take abuse from the crowd. I'm off. I'm going to go on holiday. And that was it. He resigned. We never saw him again. So going out in style was Palmer. His own brutal sacking. I particularly enjoyed that. All right. We're going to talk about some of the midweek action next. And we've got to start with a big one in the Championship on Monday. Clarkey was there to see Leicester and Ipswich draw 1-1. Was it a fair result, do you think, Adrian? Did Leicester take their foot off the gas a little, as Sam intimated to me last night?
Yeah, I think that's probably the story of it. Leicester were the better team over the course, but they eased off. They eased off the throttle in the second half. They sort of played within themselves, or at least it felt that way. And Ipswich, to their credit, really had a big gear change. First half, they came with a plan to negate Leicester. And it was interesting. It was kind of like split strikers with Jackson on the left and Burns on the right. And they basically, Fash and Vestergaard were following them. And which meant there was a hole of about 50 yards in between the centre halves. It was bizarre to watch. The sort of thing you kind of have to be there to see because you didn't come across on the television. And it was and they sort of had a box midfield with Harness and Chaplin at the top of it and the two central midfielders. And by and large, they stifled Leicester, but Leicester were the better team and Ipswich weren't really creating much. Second half, they thought, stuff this. Let's be a bit brave. Let's just play our own game. And they really pressed hard. Much more hostile, and they started to unsettle Leicester. And yeah, they rode their luck at times. The keeper made some good saves, Slabke. But the subs made the difference for me. I don't know what Sam thought. I thought Sammy Ento and Taylor come on 61, both did well. And then Hutchinson. I mean, you'll know about Amari Hutchinson from Chelsea. I know him from Arsenal. Hutchinson came on with Broadhead 10 minutes later, and Hutchinson and Sarmiento were electric in those sort of twin number 10 positions, and they hunted the ball down and they just made things happen. And the longer it went on, I felt that Ipswich warranted a goal, and eventually it came, didn't it? So yeah, when I was on air, I sort of called it as, in the end, a fair result, even though Leicester are the stronger side. I think Ipswich were worthy of the point. And I just thought it was a night where Kieran McKenna absolutely nailed it. I just thought the timing of his changes, tactically and personnel-wise, were magnificent. And he showed what a good manager he is.
That's a good point that Adrian makes there, Sam, I think, because we speak a lot about Leicester's strength in depth, don't we? And I thought there's something sort of vaguely tragic here about watching an aged Jamie Vardy sort of lumber about the pitch, putting his hand up, pointing where he wanted people to go without having any particular effect on the game. But Ipswich, as Adrian says, those three substitutes in particular that they could bring on, Sarmiento, Hutchinson and Broadhead, maybe speaks to a depth of their squad that we haven't really touched on much. We've spoke about, oh, maybe they need another defender, maybe they need another striker, but they have got strength in depth on the basis of what they did here.
Yeah, it was interesting to, you know, watching on TV and watching just how calm McKenna was during that period, the last 20 minutes or so when they were in the ascendancy. And I felt it at home. So I'm sure Clarkey must have sensed it in the stadium as well, that they were in the ascendancy, they were turning the screw, and it felt like that equaliser was likely to come. And he made some big decisions as well. I think Taylor started the last game, Travis came in here, and to leave Broadhead out, I thought was, you know, I was going to say an odd decision, but certainly I was surprised by it. I didn't think Harness had a particularly good impact, but yeah, Clarkey's absolutely right. The unpredictability of Sarmiento and Hutchinson in particular, and Broadhead, I think, even though he made two or three very questionable decisions when he could have played in Wes Burns on the right, he got into more shooting positions than Caden Jackson probably did throughout. And even though I thought Leicester played a little bit with the old cigars on in the second half at times, and the two centre halves are so imposing, so comfortable right at the top of their games, I just felt it wasn't the worst time to play Leicester, because there was still, you know, a little bit of a patched up midfield, that lack of striker option potentially as well. So they got themselves into the winning position, but maybe partly because they're a little down in numbers, no Ndidi, no Iheanacho, no Daka, you know, that was maybe liable to happen, but absolute credit to Ipswich. And I thought thoroughly deserved the point, but still probably nothing's changed in my mind that Leicester is still going to be too strong. And going into the game, I thought a win could change my perspective. It hasn't. I think that Leicester, they're still the best side and they're still going to romp to promotion.
Yeah, Mavididi, they needed to get Mavididi in the game more, because every time he got it, he looked like he was going to do something. But, you know, he was strangely quiet in the second half. Dewsbury Hall, you saw flashes of brilliance, didn't you, from him? But I think you could see that he wasn't 100% fit in the game. So you're right. I think it was a good time to play them. And yeah, Cannon, I thought, did all right. I mean, he had a couple of good efforts, didn't he? Decent centre forward. But yeah, well played Ipswich. But I'm with Sam. I actually still think Ipswich will end up in fourth or third at best, really. I think top two might still be beyond them.
Well, they are a point above third place, Southampton, after that game. Leicester and Ipswich both in FA Cup action this weekend. Leicester play Birmingham, Ipswich host Maidstone. On Tuesday in League One, Wigan scored in the 20th minute of stoppage time to beat Wickham. If you are a Wickham fan who went all the way up to Wigan to watch that, you have our sympathies. The ref got injured, so there was a delay while someone was plucked from the crowd to stand in as fourth official. I really enjoyed this from the match report on the BBC. Charlie Hughes popped up with a winner after 20 minutes of second half stoppage time as Wigan edged a 1-0 League One victory over Wickham in a match otherwise devoid of much excitement or entertainment. The game was in desperate need of something to shake it into life, and it arrived in 10 minutes after the restart in slapstick fashion. The referee was caught in a midfield sandwich, and after a delay lasting the best part of 20 minutes while a qualified official was found, he was replaced in the middle by the fourth official, Steve Rushton. Not a happy night for the Wickham players. Norfolk Derby, Adrian, they bottled the chance to go top by losing at Reading. Big win for Reading on the day that it was announced they'll get a suspended 3-point deduction for the abandonment of that game with Port Vale.
Well, it's a double win, isn't it, really, for Reading? Because I think they would have feared the worst, having suffered points deductions already. So a little bit of mercy shown from the EFL. And I agree with it, because I think the fans were pushed to a point of almost no return. So yeah, it's a sensible call in my view. But no, this was a great win, and it shows you that they've got a good manager. They've got a good group of lads, haven't they? Because it'd be easy for them to down tools and just think, I want to move on. But they are digging in. They're playing for the badge. You know, they've beaten Bolton. They've beaten Derby now. They've beaten Stevenage. They drew recently at Peterborough. I think they've only lost 1-8, Reading. They're doing really, really well. Femi Aziz looked excellent in the game from the bits that I saw. He had a really good Christmas. He's taken a lot of confidence. Harvey Nibbs is there, because the Cambridge boys, Nibbs and Smith, I think they're starting to make an impact as well now. So yeah, well done, Reading. I mean, for Derby, this is just one of those horrible evenings where you don't really show up. Nothing really works. And yeah, it's sort of they need to erase it quickly and bounce back, because the teams around them at the top of League One are all very strong.
Yeah, and one of those teams, Sam Bolton, who beat Cheltenham by 1-0, important to recover after they were beaten at Leyton Orient. Are you still thinking that they're in the conversation for top two, not just playoffs?
Yeah, absolutely. Said it so frequently. I think it's anyone's, honestly, League One. I don't think going into the season, I think we probably went for Bolton. I can't recall. Derby probably would have been the other one that me and Clarkie went for. But, you know, Peterborough, I think, have surprised their consistency. I probably didn't expect them to be as strong as they've shown. And the Portsmouth first half of the season, I think, surprised everyone. So Barnsley are coming with a really good run. Obviously, Oxford had a brilliant start to the season. I think Bolton, because give or take, you kind of know what the 11 is going to be. Really settled side, consistent in the way that they play. Ian Everett, yeah, is quite emotional, but seems to just refocus when they have a kind of bump in the road. Doesn't change the philosophy. Been there and done it really now over the last two or three seasons at Barrow and now Bolton. So yeah, absolutely. They're not going to go anywhere, whether it's a playoff campaign or automatic. Absolutely, they're going to be in the top six.
In League Two, Clarkie, MK Dons won the derby that's not a derby. They beat Wimbledon by 3-1. That, I mean, obviously, it's an important victory because of the rivalry between the teams. But given they were beaten at home by Morecambe on Saturday, again, like Bolton, we're talking bounce back ability, aren't we? And we're talking about another good MK Dons managerial appointment. They either tend to be disastrous or excellent, don't they? And it looks like Mike Williamson might fall into the latter category.
Yeah, they've had a few poached, haven't they, down the years? Yeah, they are usually pretty good recruiters in that position. He was missing, actually, Mike Williamson, which makes the performance and the win even better. I think he suffered a close family bereavement, so we wish him well moving forward. So he had to miss the game, but what a good response from his team. They had 12 shots on target. You have 12 shots on target in a game, you absolutely deserve to win it. I think Wimbledon only had a couple themselves. Nice to see Dan Kemp score. First MK Dons goal, even though he joined them a couple of years ago. So he's taken his Swindon form into his return at MK. So that was great. It was a lovely assist, by the way, from Tomlinson. Sort of ghosted past his player down the left and squared it for him. Really enjoyed that. And Wimbledon will look at the two red cards, won't they? And think, you know, that's done us. But the damage was really done early on when it was 11-11. They were 3-0 down. On those red cards, I don't know if you've seen them. They were both professional fouls, long balls hoisted over the top for the striker to chase, and kind of tangles. And on both occasions, the ref got the red card straight, you know, whipped out the red straight away. And I always feel that's quite unlucky. I don't know what you think. You're a striker, Sam, so you probably see it in the other point of view, but you know those 1v1s where there's a bit, you're sprinting with the centre half and then there's a collision and then the striker is obviously always so keen to hit the deck because they know it's going to be a red. I always feel that's a cheap red, if you know what I mean. Fair enough, if they take a slide tackle and take them out, you know, marching orders. But sometimes these tangles, I think, are harsh reds.
I was rarely running onto three balls, Clarkie. Normally the defender got there a yard before.
Well, you must have watched a few from your strike partners.
Yeah. There was a few, actually, you know, when you just get a toe to the ball and it was the last man a few times. But I think sometimes, you know, like the size of you, the amount of time it takes to get down to the deck, like a falling tree, sometimes went against me. But no, I know what you mean. But no, I was rarely involved in those, rarely involved. I'm always coming towards the ball, Clarkie, annoyingly for all my managers, rather than running away.
There was one other thing that caught my eye from watching the highlights of this game. It was Wimbledon's consolation. They scored a goal. It was a short pass out from the keeper, intercepted, and Armani Little scored it. And this was a very modern celebration, Matt, because rather than racing into the net to have what would have been an inevitable tangle with the goalkeeper as they grappled the ball, he's run to the side and gone to a cone that has a multi-ball on it, and whips that off and then runs back to the halfway line with it.
Nice.
I don't know where you stand on this, but I quite liked it.
Ask Brian McClare. He was the master, wasn't he, getting the ball out the back of the net?
He was, yeah.
One for the kids there.
A right stramash, yeah. Right, Bradford and Salford drew 1-1. We'll talk a bit about Salford later. Sam, Mansfield are going to break my heart again, aren't they? One win in five now for them, held at home by Sutton. I read in the match report that wind affected the quality of this game, and I look and see that Mansfield had 17 shots and only two of them were on target. You can't blame all that on the weather, I don't think.
No, looks like they should have got the job done, although... You know, conceded very early. Liang goal for Sutton. Steve Morrison's had a relatively good start there, certainly making them harder to beat. And yeah, they'll be encouraged by that start. But yeah, Mansfield, I think so many years we've fancied them. Vastly experienced 11, vastly experienced manager. I don't know. I still think that they've got a great opportunity. You know, look at the teams that are jostling around there. I suppose Notts County would have been the ones going into the season. But having had the upheaval there, and now Stuart Maynard, a rookie, first time that he's been in the league, there's that uncertainty, I suppose, and the amount of goals they're conceding that they're shipping. I don't know if that's going to be sustainable. That's probably quite an ask to get them in the automatic promotion mix now, given that they've had to change manager. So, no, I'd probably say MK Dons at the moment. Don't know what Clarkie thinks, but I think the rhythm that they're playing with, obviously they had that disappointment against Morecambe at the weekend, but no, I can't see too many teams outside the top two that you'd put your house on. So I think it could be their year, Matt. Could be their year. Get Carl Palmer on the phone, see what he thinks.
All right, I'll tap him up next time I speak to him, which might be quite a while from now. Carlton Palmer left his last managerial job a long time ago. Some others have done so much more recently. We'll talk about those next. So Tuesday then saw the League One axe once again be wielded. Not a very good sentence, that. But anyway, Michael Appleton has been sacked as Charlton boss. The 10th League One manager to lose his job this season. His P45 is winging its way to him after he saw his side concede a 97th minute winner at home to Northampton. The Addicts haven't won in their last 12 games. I think, Adrian, the club rather than the manager are the bigger story here, right? Because Charlton cycle through owners almost as quickly as they do managers. Nobody's seemingly able to get it right. They are, unfortunately, a mess of a football club.
Yeah, it's been a long, slow, painful decay, hasn't it, at the Valley? And yeah, I don't think it is about the individual managers. It's about the ownership. It's about, you know, the decisions that they've made. Yes, I mean, you've got the relatively new owners now. And I mean, some of the characters involved in it have had checkered histories, haven't they, at other clubs?
And on Netflix documentaries.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even the director of football, Andy Scott, it hasn't worked out for him at other places, and he's getting a lot of flack here because his two managerial hires, Dean Holden and Michael Appleton, have both gone after about 30-odd games each. So it's not a good look for him. I was thinking Charlton were winning the transfer window. I mean, there's some great signings they were making. Really impressive. And Ladapo, Connor Coventry, Gillisfay, the Plymouth man, good defender. Huddersfield's Edmunds Green. You know, some good names there. And you look at their team and you think, well, they should be flying high. They've got a team that should be flying high, but they remain a soft touch. They were under Holden. They were under the previous regime. They give too many goals away. I don't know whether it's a cultural thing. I can't put my finger on it. I don't watch them every week in the flesh, but yeah, it feels to me as if obviously the club has been in decay. There's no, you know, the fans aren't showing up. The atmosphere's poor, but yeah, it also feels like they've got a lot of players. Like, a ridiculous amount of players for a League One club. If you look at their, go on Soccer Base, right? Go on Soccer Base and look at Charlton and you'll see an unbelievable list of players. And for me, that's a massive negative because too many players aren't playing. And when players aren't playing, they're moany, they're disruptive, or they can be. And I don't think Appleton did great, obviously, but it goes beyond what he did with that team.
The paper talk, Sam, by which I mean X, formerly known as Twitter, is that Nathan Jones is the early front runner. There's no chance he's going to Charlton in League One, is there?
Yeah, coup for them, wouldn't it? I suppose. He was there before, was he not?
No, he was friends with the goalie coach. He was good pals with
Was it Brighton he started at then? Brighton, was it?
Yeah.
He was at Brighton, yeah. He was at Brighton as a player. He was friends of a guy that ended up at Charlton.
I'm going to look that up.
He lived for a while, I believe, Nathan. I think he lived around that area, around Greenwich area.
Matt, look that up while I'm talking. But, yeah.
You getting them confused with Mestegg Park or Tonpentry or Merthyr Tydfil or Nymphia?
I just thought he worked with Jacko somewhere. Maybe I've got it wrong. I don't know.
He joined Championship Club Charlton Athletic as their under-21 professional development coach in 2012.
Oh, well done, Sam.
So he's been there before, basically. So he'd be just retracing old steps. So, well, do you know what? I did a bit of reading on it this morning just to see what the latest was. I'm a bit tired of it, to be honest. So can you imagine how the punters are feeling? Just read it and I echo Clarkie's sentiment, and I've said it over the last few years. They've cherry-picked a lot of the best players in League One and League Two over the last three or four seasons and accumulated, especially in attacking positions and in the midfield, a really good squad for the level. So why they can't get a tune out of them more consistently, all these managers, I just don't understand. It must be something cultural. It must be partly the lack of balance in the squad. I think you can question if the goalkeeper's good enough. And they've conceded the second amount. Most amount of goals in the division. And just on that defeat last night, I had a little look. I mean, Wycombe Wanderers fans turn off. They conceded 17 goals in the last 10 minutes, Wycombe, which is far and away the most. But Charlton have conceded 12, which is the second most. There's been 26 goals in the last 15 minutes of their games, which is just mayhem. So I think that's probably a little bit what's going on there. There's just zero kind of game plan consistency. And Michael Appleton's not done well enough, but, and this is by no means having a go at the fans because that's the furthest thing away from my mind. But yeah, I mean, obviously they've been displeased with the recent performances, but clearly I don't think this is on the manager. I think it's a club that's been in a mess for a long time, and whoever takes it on, good luck to them. And I hope they can turn it around. It feels a bit like Stoke for different reasons, but just another club that's been in such a long malaise, difficult to see a way through, but hopefully the next one will be able to show some shoots of recovery.
20 years ago, Matt, they were fourth in the Premier League. They were London's top club. They're now London's 10th top club. So, you know, it's quite a fall, isn't it?
You heard it from Clarkie. Give it curbs till the end of the season. Elsewhere, the Shrews are in the news. This after they parted company with Matt Taylor. It followed a run of 7 defeats in 8 games, culminating in last weekend's 2-1 defeat to Peterborough. Sam, they've only scored 18 times in 28 this season. Joint fewest in the whole of the EFL. In fact, that will be the fewest now, won't it? Because Exeter scored a goal last night. Is it a style thing or is it a results thing? I guess from an owner's perspective, they're looking at the league table and thinking we need to make a change here rather than based on the quality of the football on the pitch. It's the fact that they are in danger of going down.
Both, I think, Matt. I think of Shrewsbury, even under Steve Cotchell, who obviously is really well-liked there, even under Paul Hurst, under a number of managers over the last decade, hard to beat, invariably a back three, well-coached without the ball, not a lot of excitement. And I think that's been a continuation to the extent where they've been so poor going forward. I think Clarkie might have said this on the last podcast or maybe the previous week. How many goals have they scored away from home? Quick quiz.
I can't remember, but I know that the line I've got right in front of me that I jotted down today is that they've failed to score in 10 of 14 away games, which is shocking.
Yeah, four goals.
Four goals they've scored away from home. Joint lowest scorers. Obviously got themselves in front at Peterborough last time out, but I think there was a sense of inevitability about the outcome because of the lack of goals. I think Udo is the one who's looked relatively sprightly. They've brought Bloxham back from Morecambe, where I think he's been struggling to score as well. Young kid, I think he's still a teenager. So that's been the problem. And clearly Matt Taylor is, you know, he's a really good guy, Matt. I mean, he should still be playing. I played with him last summer in a charity game. Oh my God. he looked like he was 21. Unbelievable player. Incredible career. Lovely guy. But his two jobs have not gone to plan, Walsall and now Shrewsbury. So I'm not sure, you know, if he walks into another job at that level or have to rebuild to a degree. But like I said, he's got such experience and I think something to give, but you know, I think Shrewsbury, the squad probably needs a little bit of an overhaul. The last I read it was Paul Hurst maybe going back in, which would seem relatively sensible, wouldn't it, because of his past experience. And he left when they were at an incredible high to go to Ipswich. So I'd imagine that'll be championed. But I think squad really is the biggest issue here and definitely needs a little bit of a rebuild.
Of those four away league goals they've scored, I've just had a look. Two of them were in August. It's not been a particularly fun season.
I mean, yeah, the away fans. I mean, you're not giving them anything, are you? That's the thing. You know, those that travel home and away, just not giving them enough excitement. So, yeah, I think...
Is that why they're looking at Paul Hurst then? Because they want to try and get the fans on side and it's an emotion-led appointment? Or is he the best candidate?
It depends who wants the job, doesn't it? I think Michael Duff is in the mix, but because the director of football there, Mickey Moore, was at Cheltenham, worked with Duff. So that's an obvious link. But is Shrewsbury, you know, too small a job for him? You know, has he got his sights on something a bit bigger? If he'd do the job, he's probably the strongest candidate. With Hurst, I think that there'll be split opinion because even though he brought the good times, I think they were third or fourth, weren't they? I think they finished... Was it third? Yeah, they were in the top four for sure.
They lose at Wembley twice that season, playoffs and Football League Trophy final, if memory serves me right.
I think so, yeah. So, I mean, brilliant achievement. But he did ditch them, didn't he? He did walk out on them for Ipswich. And I think that obviously has left a sour taste for some. So I don't think that it'll be welcomed back, you know, sort of by everybody. But yeah, he's people with an affinity to a club, it usually gets you off to a decent start, doesn't it?
Well, we'll keep an eye on that, or we'll just wait until whoever is appointed is done so the moment I hit publish on this podcast, and you can skip this section of it. Next today, though, we are going to look ahead to some of the weekend's big games. In the Championship, not too many fixtures because the FA Cup is reaching the fourth round stage, but Sunderland versus Stoke. I'm calling this the where's the new manager bounce derby. Mick Beale already feeling the heat after three straight defeats, like his opposite number, Steve Schumacher. He's only won two of his opening seven games.
Harsh, Matt. That's harsh.
Well, you know, I'm just going by Twitter, which is always the best barometer of how things are going. We all know that. Michael Beale, Clarkey, I say he's under pressure. The reason that I think that is because he's lost three of four at home without scoring.
Yeah,
we're talking about trying to win supporters over. You're not going to do it like that.
Oh, no. Look, hashtag Beale out was all over Twitter on Sunday, all over the weekend. All I could see was Beale out on the sort of that trending sidebar. The fans don't want him. But I think it's because he's not Tony Mowbray, really. I think that's a lot to do with it. They did in that game against Hull. They had a lot of shots. I think they had 15 shots to two. Hull only had two shots. So it wasn't a car crash performance, but it was a performance that lacked a bit of verve, a bit of inspiration. It was a bit one-paced. And that's the sort of vibe I think I'm getting off Sunderland under Beale so far. They don't have that energy that they had under Mowbray. The players don't seem as enthused maybe by working for Beale. So we'll see what happens. Schumacher, in my opinion, shouldn't be classed in the same boat. I watched them twice, was really impressed with them both times. I think he has improved them. They're better with the ball. They're a better pressing team now. They just don't have enough natural goal scorers in the team at the moment. That's an issue for them. But I think Stoke will be fine. He's brought in a new goalie, Everson. He's brought in Cundall, hasn't he? We worked with at Plymouth. But yeah, in general, I think Stoke are on the way up. But Sunderland, it feels like they're clinging on by their fingertips for the playoffs. I just don't really see it happening. I think they might end up in mid-table now.
Stoke won 2-1 when the teams met earlier in the season. They won 5-1 at the Stadium of Light last term. Another massive game, Sam, involving your boys, QPR against Huddersfield. QPR with that big win against Millwall last time out. It was their first in nine attempts. At Loftus Road, you'd fancy them to get the job done against the Huddersfield team are in rotten form themselves?
I think it was last winter where everything was relatively rosy at QPR. My mind may be a little bit hazy, but Huddersfield went and put 11 men behind the ball. Mark Fotheringham was the manager and they escaped West London with a 1-0 victory. So anything can happen when you follow QPR. That's probably the most pessimistic QPR fan will be seeing this in their dreams the next couple of nights, their nightmares. But I thought it was probably the biggest win of the weekend. QPR's on balance. Yes, Southampton played some scintillating stuff, some great wins for Coventry, the way they're going, Norwich. Plymouth Argyle, given all the upheaval there. But I just thought for lots of ingredients, that was a colossal win. The kind of return to form in the first half of Willock and Chair combining for a goal, defensive performance of Cook and Jake Clark-Salter, Cannon at right back, first moment I've seen him really, he's looked like a good addition, kind of had a bit of a problem at right back for over a year now, I would say, QPR. And maybe the biggest thing, Sinclair Armstrong getting a goal at the Loft End. I think he scored in back-to-back home games now. And after the disappointment of the Watford result and the amount of opportunities he in particular spurned, I just think, given that he's maybe QPR's best player at the moment, or certainly most exciting forward player, to get that goal, to get him up and running at home, to give him the confidence, I think just changes the dynamic completely. And it's been a really bad run after that initial upturn. But yeah, I would agree with you. They go into this game as favourites. And I think now that Darren Moore has been back to a degree in the market, Reece Healy, Radulovic, Alex Matos from Chelsea, there's three straight away that should improve his squad and their opportunity of staying in the division. But they can't continue attacking games. I say attacking, they can't continue going into games not to lose. They're going to have to win some points and they're going to have to be more attack-minded, I'm sure. Otherwise, the way that the owner's going, speaking out after every game, if there's not a sea change in terms of the style, and I know points are the most imperative thing here, but I don't think they can put everyone behind the ball every week. They're going to have to show different strings to their bow now that they've got more attacking options. Otherwise, Darren Moore and his position will come under increasing scrutiny. So this is massive game, 3 points in it now. Next up for Huddersfield after QPR, Sheffield Wednesday at home. So I think these two games ultimately are probably going to dictate what happens to Darren Moore and probably dictates what's going to happen to Huddersfield for the rest of the season.
Big weekend coming up then. In League One, Bristol Rovers against Oxford. Adrian, we'll start with the away team just because why not mix it up a little bit? Des Buckingham's an unlikely name for a manager in 2024. I wrote yesterday, 3 wins from 4 in the league suggests he's got to grips with things, and then they went and lost midweek. So how do we? What's your take on him now?
Yeah, they lost to Barnsley, but it was only their only shot on target, Barnsley. So you know, I think that was a bad game in the wind. You know, awful conditions. Maybe Barnsley played to the conditions better than Oxford, from what I gather. Yeah, look, it's largely been okay for Oxford. I think their points per game is actually slightly down on what it was under Liam Manning earlier on in the season. So there's you know, not everyone's completely sold yet on Buckingham, but the goodwill is there. He's from the local area. He's clearly a really good coach. He's got them to maybe have a bit more possession. They're knocking the ball around very, very nicely, averaging, you know, high percentages in terms of keeping the ball. And you know, he supplemented the squad, hasn't he? Tyler Bury, who remember Sam talking about last year from Millwall, he's come in. Carl Edwards as well, new goalie. Jamie Cumming, he's ex-Chelsea, isn't he? He's played for
a
new...
He's on loan from Chelsea.
Yeah, exactly. He's come. He's had a number of loan moves, hasn't he? So he's shaking things up. They have won their last two away games at Carlisle, at Charlton. So yeah, they'll come into this one, even though they've lost in midweek and fancy their chances, I would have thought. Bristol Rovers themselves didn't have a good result in midweek either. So yeah, Oxford are fine, and I think they're playing good football and are likely to stick around in the playoffs. But I personally think top two is beyond them at the moment.
Normally, you'd say that it might favour the home team, Sam, but Bristol Rovers lost 3 on the trot in front of their own supporters, albeit one of those was against Norwich, but it's 4 defeats in a row, all comps. They haven't won in 2024, taking Matt Taylor a little bit of time to get to grips with things, it would appear.
Yeah, and they started well, won 3 of their first 5, and yeah, that was not good last night against Exeter. I think John Marquis had a late goal disallowed, Harvey Vale missed an opportunity on the far post, but it looked like chances were few and far between. I don't think they had a shot on target actually last night. So yeah, third home game in quick succession, they're going to need a reaction. I think that they're hindered by injuries at the moment. I think that Matt Taylor wants a little bit of help in the transfer market. And I, you know, on the face of it, going into this season, I fancied Bristol Rovers. I'd be interested to hear where we had them placed or if we had them in our kind of promotion fancies, because I think attacking wise, got some really good players. And I don't think Aaron Collins, for one, is in brilliant form at the moment. I know there's speculation about his future. Giovanni Brown, I remember we talked about that transfer being a real standout one in the division. Marquis Martin. Martin is the one that has performed, but I think that kind of array of talent should be doing better. And, you know, all the statistics, all the metrics, the goals for, goals against, the points total, it's very, very mid-table. And that's probably where they'll end up, but they need to arrest this slide, and they need to do it quickly, because the fans aren't happy, and this is another opportunity to get points, and they need to arrest this slide and quickly. Otherwise, yeah, Matt Taylor will be being questioned, and the supporters will be questioning whether this was the right appointment.
In League Two, it is Crewe against Salford. Interesting, Clarkie, that when we were talking about people who might be able to usurp Mansfield in the top three places, we didn't mention Crewe. Mm. They're closest to doing so. Game with Morecambe fell foul of the weather midweek, but you know, there's an automatic promotion place with their name on it, they will think.
Well, 2024 feels like it might be their year. Since the clock struck midnight, they've won four in a row in League Two. So They're loving life at the moment. It's brilliant away results, didn't they? At Barrow, at Mansfield. I mean, that, if anything's going to boost your confidence, it's that. And not least because they've scored a lot of goals this season, but always leaked goals, Crewe. And to go to Barrow and to Mansfield and to sort of, you know, outscore them will do their self-belief the world of good. I was looking at some of the numbers. In open play, there's only one team that's actually faced more shots than Crewe, and that's Colchester United. So there's something structurally in the team that needs solidifying.
They're not so solid, Crewe, is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Well played that man. Harvey, he was in so solid Crewe, wasn't he? He used to play
Ex-Wimbledon, was he?
That's it. He used to play in every charity game going, didn't he? He was a buddy. He was Ralph Little before Ralph Little was Ralph Little, if you get what I'm saying.
Good world to get Lisa Mafia into this chat.
But yeah, look, yeah, Crewe have got goal scorers. They're brilliant at set pieces. We know that. And they'll be favourites to beat Salford. For me personally, because they're not so solid, Crewe won't get in the top three.
What about Salford, Sam? Carl Robinson will hope to stay on the touchline for this one. They had a game postponed last week as well. Is that kind of useful for a manager? No, they went and played Bradford and drew 1-1. But having that one game called off soon after you get the job, I guess you're kind of thinking, oh, great, we're getting 11v11 on the training pitch and I can find out a bit more about these guys.
Yeah, I feel like my answer wants to be they could do with about a year on the training ground, Salford, I reckon. And not because it's like a disaster or a really awful squad. I'm not saying that at all, but it's just to define what they are and what they're going to be. I think they've got a really good manager for the level. I think the 5 points in his initial three games shows you that. I think it'll be really exciting. And I think he is probably the type of manager who could instill a real playing style. I think the forward players will enjoy it. I think Callum Hendry's back now and looked relatively sharp. And I think we spoke so often the back end of last season about that firepower, about the pace, about the directness. And if they can get that back, they can have a good end to the season, I believe. Need to turn around their home form. Only Forest Green have taken fewer points away from home. They're pretty good. So just need to marry that up. And that's probably something, I'm just thinking out loud here, but more about the club. You know, making it intimidating to go there, getting the fans on side, on top. And I think the exciting brand of football could bring that. I just looked at their maiden victory under Carl Robinson. I don't know if you saw this, Clarkie, but this was the most surprising thing that I found in the last couple of days. They had 35 shots at Crawley, which, I mean, has that ever happened before?
that is incredible. That is very, very hard. I mean, if that'll get the fans back. I mean, on that subject, boys, does anyone really care enough about Salford City? I don't mean that in a nasty way. Like, they've been in existence for quite a while now in terms of being a league club. They've got superstar owners. Yeah, it feels like any marketing that they're doing is kind of falling on deaf ears.
It's the reverse like Wrexham, basically, isn't it? Yeah. Wrexham made them look really bad from that.
Yeah, like you would have thought they would have had access to better marketeers, that they would have found a way to grow the club, but haven't done it at all, have they? It's, it just, you know, I've only been there once, but it still feels a little bit like a non-league club, Salford City.
Yeah, maybe changing the colour of the kit as soon as you get there was a mistake, and swapping managers every 5 minutes. But who knows? What do I know? Right, quick quiz to finish off. Three questions based on the games that we're previewing. Hands up when you know the answer, please. It might take a while for an arm to be raised for the first question. Before Lyndon Gooch made the switch last summer, who was the most recent player to move from Sunderland to Stoke? I'll give you a clue. It was an international defender, and he moved in the summer of 2014. Ooh, straight up.
I think I'm wrong. I think I am. John O'Shea, I'm going to say.
You are wrong. Yeah. You're not a million miles away, though, Sam. Okay.
Yeah.
Sunderland to Stoke in 2014. Sunderland to Stoke. Along that theme, I don't think he played for Stoke. Oh, yeah. I think it's him. Phil Bardsley.
Absolutely.
I was going to go Wes Brown. I was going to Wes Brown you there, but no. Wes Brown didn't play for
Stoke. I
don't
remember him at Stoke. Yeah, Bardsley. Ah, very good. Well played. You just took that little breath there, didn't you? Took a beat.
Yeah.
Eden Hazard certainly remembers Phil Bardsley at Stoke because he's still got the stud marks on his calf, I think. Question two then. It's 1-0 to Sam. Which Indian team was Des Buckingham in charge of before he got the Oxford job?
Just thinking, where has Phil Brown been?
I think your best tactic here is probably to pick a city in India and then put a common suffix of a football team next to it. And
I know a few. Yeah. I'm sure I do.
Mind blanks. I even talked about it on this podcast where he'd been, and he'd been successful with this club, but now I've forgotten it. I'm going to say Delhi. Delhi, someone's.
The Delhi Daredevils is incorrect. Delhi, I can tell you.
I just want to say Mumbai. I don't even think there's been a team there, but.
Oh, I'm going to give you half a point for that because it's actually Mumbai City.
Yay!
I think you can give him the whole point for that.
Take my half.
It means you've won, so whether you get a half or a one, that's fine. But Clarky, we need to get you on the board here. So here's the final question. Carl Robinson replaced Neil Wood as Salford manager, but who preceded Wood in what is the hottest of hot seats for the Amis? Had an awful lot of managers in recent years. Sam's got his hand up.
I don't think this is right, but...
I
remember Clarky interviewing him. I think he might have been the one before. Graham Alexander?
Incorrect.
It wasn't him. The one in between, I think, was Bowyer.
That's the answer.
Yeah, okay.
Well done. Brought back a bit of respectability. Courtesy of Gary Bowyer. You win, though, Sam. Are you pleased with that?
First win.
Really pleased. Yeah. On reflection, Mumbai was the difference maker. Happy with it.
It's 10:24 in the morning, and that's probably going to be the highlight of your day. If you top it, let us know. That's just about going to do it for today. A reminder before we go of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the pod. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. You can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at EFL What the EFL on TikTok and Instagram. The best way that you can support this podcast is to leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. It helps other people find the show. Tell a friend too. Tell them we've changed, Dave, but we're still as good, if not better, than ever. Many thanks to Adrian and Sam for their expertise today, but mainly to you for joining us. We really do appreciate it, and we hope that you'll be back with us same time next week. Bye for now.